This is a View from the Bridge, official podcast of the Belfast Giants for kingdomofthegiants.com. Today is Tuesday, the 21st of January 2014, and my name is Patrick Smith. Holy Mackinaw, what a show have we got for you today. We got to chat with the voice of the Toronto Maple Leafs, Mr. Joe Bowen. Guy's been calling Maple Leafs games for 30 years, both in television and on radio. Over 3,000 games watching Canada, one of Canada's premier NHL franchises. And we got a good half hour with the guy, incredibly. We'll tell you the story about how that came about later in the show, and you'll get to hear every single word of it. We also got to talk to Kevin Surrett, absolutely flying ahead in the point scoring for the Belfast Giants and the goal scoring for the Belfast Giants. I got a chat with him earlier today, a gentleman to chat to, and it was a very interesting one at that. That's coming up. We've also got Paul Eddy and Doug Christensen's post-match comments from the game in Sheffield on Saturday. And Davey and the coach are, of course, here to talk about the games, ask Davey and all sorts besides. Podcast@kingdomofthegiants.com was our email. SoundCloud.com/AVFTB for all interviews and whatnot. What else? www.kingdomofthegiants.com/podcast is our website. And @AVFTB is, of course, our Twitter site. So let's get on with it. Well, there's only one place to start, and that's to introduce the two lads. First of all, the Sultan of Stats, Davey McGimsey.
How you doing, Patrick? How you?
Not too bad, buddy. And the King of the Ding, Neil the Coach Russell. There he is.
Hiya, Patty.
Gentlemen, it's great when you can say this every week, but it's been another successful week for the Belfast Giants. And that started on Saturday night, live on Premier Sports, Murph and Jeff Woolhouse and Scott Antcliffe doing the coverage of the game against the Sheffield Steelers at the Motorpoint Arena. A 3-1 win for the Belfast Giants. Coach, goals for Lloyd, Surrett and Chevrolet, and a goal for the Steelers and Sirianni, but it was a professional job by the Belfast Giants.
I thought we were absolutely superb, especially in those opening couple of periods. I honestly thought that we completely dominated it. Funny, I saw on Twitter, Patty, during the game, a tweet from Bob Westerdale, one of the journalists that cover the Sheffield Steelers, and he said at the end of the first period, you know, Belfast Giants are leading. Sheffield Steelers are very unlucky, you know, a very fortunate position for Belfast, something along those lines. And I sent him a message back saying, are you watching the same game as the rest of us here? I really thought that we were dominant in those opening couple of periods. And, you know, the Sheffield Steelers came into the game and played very, very well in that third period. But I thought we were absolutely superb. I have to say, a very, very professional performance.
I think you're absolutely right. I saw that tweet from Bob Westerdale. I saw the reply. And I thought I'd have a wee look and see how dominant they were. The Belfast Giants outshot them 13-8. In that first period. So, and I agree with you, I don't know what game he was watching. The Belfast Giants came out really, really quickly in the opening exchanges. And yeah, Sheffield were going to fight back, but were very, very disjointed for me. Davey, how do you see that game?
I thought from back to front we were very, very good. Between the pipes, Stephen Murphy had one of his best games of the season, and he saved it for the cameras. And, you know, our transition game, I think, was mentioned a few times by Murph and Jeff Woolhouse co-commentating, wasn't it? I think they mentioned a few times just how good we are getting that puck from the blue line to the red line, and it just ran through. There's a vein of confidence running through this team at the minute as well, and we're coming on the ice expecting, you know, to put teams away, and we came out with a lot of confidence. And, you know, I would wholeheartedly agree with Coach there what game was Bob watching, because at the end of the first period, I thought we were worthy of the position we were in. And as the game wore on, yes, sure, Sheffield came into it in the third period and had a real good go at us, but, you know, bar their goal, Murphy stood tall for us. Stephen Murphy had a fantastic game, and, you know, two well-deserved points.
I think that's something that we maybe haven't spoken enough about on the podcast. We've waxed lyrical about about numerous other players and what have you. You know, our defensive pairing of Elfring and Brookwell and our forwards and all. Stephen Murphy has been an absolute brick wall for us this season. You know, he picked up that injury at the back end of last season, and, you know, had a bit of a disjointed season, but he has come back fantastically well for us, and he came up with some fantastic saves in that third period, especially to stonewall the Sheffield Steelers, who were putting a lot of pressure on us in that final period. And Stephen Murphy, for me, has been a standout player over the last few months for the Giants.
I think we spoke about it earlier in the season, and it would be harsh to say he wasn't brilliant early doors, but I think on one of the podcasts in sort of October, November time, we said that it had a slow start and it really came to boil in sort of November time.
He's I think it was after the Coventry game, David. Do you remember the beat us 5-0? I think it was after that.
Right, we were kind of... Okay. We were going, he's starting to go east to west through his net, as good as I've ever seen him. His left to right play is absolutely fantastic at the minute. And I said, what is it, his fourth season in Belfast? He's got a good chance of backstopping the team. It's the British netminder for a second time. That's two fingers up to Dave Sims on that one. You know, I'm just with the number two. You know, he's playing as well now as I've seen him play with the teal on him, and yeah, long may it continue.
He turned away 33 shots in Sheffield on Saturday night, and I have to agree, one of the best performances I've seen of him all season. And that's not to say he's been poor, it sounds difficult, but it was an absolute... And you look at the Sheffield Steelers and you look how strong they are going forward. They're not shy in that department. You know, when you look at the likes of Jeff Legree, proven in the Elite League, regardless of how good he is and how many goals he can stick away. With Sirianni, you've got Di Casimiro, you've got Robert Dow, the golden child of Sheffield. Again, you know, Stephen Murphy stood up to all of them, and he, as you say, left or right, he was just covering everything that night. I think the Giants coach, one of the things that I spoke to Paul Leddy about, and we'll hear that interview in a second, is the fact that the Giants have got this ability of, and we spoke about it before, getting that lead and then containing that lead, you know, getting the job done. They got their three goals up, and in the third, they just had to contain the Sheffield Steelers, and that's exactly what they did.
But it goes back to what your initial question, Paddy, professionalism. And that's what this Belfast Giants have in abundance. And how do you get professionalism? It's through experience. And the experience in our team has really shone through this season. You know, you've a lot of like elder statesman type guys, you know, and the likes of Sandrock and Elfring at the back. Other guys, a lot of experience as well, the likes of Jeff Mason. There's calmness there at the back. Cody Brookwell, I remember at one stage with a fantastic stick check. And I can't remember who it was on, just at the vital stage. It might have been Sirianni going in on goal. And Brookwell just got in there at the right time. And, you know, we just do the right things at the right time. And it all comes down to professionalism and being well-drilled. You know, I think a lot of credit has to go to Paul Leddy as well there. We're just such a hard-working professional team.
The one point to make before we listen to the post-game interviews is that the unfortunate incident with regards to Randy Dagenais' daughter, Evelyn, who passed away the day before the game. There was a minute's silence before the game, and in the 12th minute, everybody rose to their feet to applaud the number, as Dagenais wore the number 12 for Sheffield, but they in support of him. It was a great moment for the club. Post-game interviews we had with, first of all, you hear Doug Christensen, and then we'll hear Paul Leddy.
Joining me after the game is head coach of the Sheffield Steelers, Doug Christensen. Doug, that's a big win for the Belfast Giants. The Belfast Giants were the last team to come in here and win. How do you feel that game went?
Belfast played for 60 minutes. They did a great job. I mean, I've been fortunate enough to coach a lot of the guys in that room. They're full of competitors. They knew the moment, and they seized it. And there's no question that they pretty much have to fall flat on their face now to not win the title. But we have to make sure right now that we pick ourselves up. We got a massive game tomorrow, Challenge Cup. We need to make sure that we get the result there and move forward and keep clawing away, because there's still a lot of hockey to be played.
Belfast came out pretty hot from the start. You said the weather, the storm. Coming into the third period, you obviously knew what you had to do, and you were doing it well.
Well, I thought the third period we were great. I thought the penalty, it just really took a lot of wind out of our sails. I haven't seen the video, but I'm pretty darn sure he just fell. You know, you get those calls when things are going right for you, and you don't get those calls when they're not going for you. And you know what? I thought that if that hadn't happened, maybe we make it 3-2 around the 10-minute mark, and then all of a sudden, all the momentum's on our side. But the reality is, Belfast played an outstanding game, and we lost. And we have to find a way to, in this 2014, win those games. And we're going to see them again. I'm very, very certain of it, not just in the league, but in other competitions. And we've got to find a way through them.
A couple of weeks ago, the owner of the Sheffield Steelers, Tony Smith, questioned the mental fortitude of the Belfast Giants. Did that put any pressure on you to sort of prove him right tonight?
No, I hadn't even heard that till now.
Okay. So how do you get back on the horse after this?
Easy. We walk back in the room, we hang out, we put a smile on our face, and we move forward, because there's nothing we can do. That's the beauty of this game. That's the beauty of the sport we play tomorrow. And thankfully, it's a different competition, and it's a playoff game for us.
Okay, thanks, mate.
Thank you.
Following the 3-1 victory for the Belfast Giants over the Sheffield Steelers, I'm joined by head coach Paul Leddy. Coach, it was a tight start. This was always going to be a big game, but a great victory.
Yeah, I mean, I thought we came out really well tonight and played really well, dominated the early stages and created a great scoring chance. Eventually, we got an early goal, and that just set us on the right track. And, you know, we dominated good parts of the first and second period, played very well, sat back too much in the third period. I think we tried to absorb too much pressure, and Murphy had to make some big saves for us to keep the scoreline at 3-1. And so we take the 2 points, another big road game for us.
It is the way of this Belfast Giants squad that when we do get a bit of a lead, then we do try to absorb any sort of pressure and close it out. And in the third, the Sheffield Steelers really came at us. Now, they got their goal, but the Giants had to fight back.
Yeah, I mean, they have some good scoring forwards and some speed, and not the best team to sit back against. And I didn't want the guys to sit back so much, but sometimes when you have that lead, it's just kind of a natural thing to sit back a little bit. And like I said, we gave up maybe a couple too many scoring chances there in the third, but Murphy came up big for us, and we cleared the rebounds, didn't give him those second chances, which was key. Sometimes if you give up the first chance, you can live with that, but the second chance, if you can get the puck away from your net, and that's key, and that's what our defensemen did a really good job in front of our net.
As the game went on and the Sheffield were so far behind, Tim Spencer came onto the ice and started to try to get at some of our players, but we kept our calm, we kept our discipline, and won out.
That was a big key. I mean, obviously, he's out there trying to get guys off the ice to create 4-on-4 situations to open the ice up, but our guys were smart. And I told the guys not to get involved with them. There's no point at 3-0. And the guys were very disciplined. They took a couple of cheap shots here and there, a few spears here and there, maybe some punches. But overall, they were very disciplined, and that's why we won the game.
We just had Dave Sims in here saying that more or less does it, but we've still got a game up in Edinburgh. We've still got the Sheffield Steelers to roll into Belfast. There's still a lot of hockey to be played.
There's a lot of games to be played. I mean, people are telling us that maybe to try to slow us down, but we can't listen to that. You know, it's a compliment, obviously, because we have a big lead right now, but there's still a lot of games left, a lot of points still up for grab, and we're just going to have to keep fighting for every point.
And then what's the plan for Edinburgh? The last time we were up there, it wasn't a great result. We want to avenge that.
Well, I think we played well. We just didn't put the puck in the net, and they scored in a couple of power plays. So we have to go in there and play a really good game like we did tonight. We have to have that same mentality as if we're going in to play Sheffield. And I think if we do that, then we can get a good result. But we're not going to take Edinburgh lightly. They've won quite a few games in their rink this year.
Thanks very much, Coach.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
The video highlights of that game from Steelers TV are on kingdomofthegiants.com. Just quickly before we move on to the game in Edinburgh, I'll ask the two of you, start yourself. Davey, we said the Steelers a week ago, we said they're not even in the running. Does that really knock them out?
They're a long way back now. I feel, you know, Steelers, 32 games played, 39 points versus the Giants of 35, three games more, 20 points behind, they're 19 points behind the Giants. There ain't no coming back to win the league, you know, with what they're going for second place here now. You know, just I don't think they're... I ruled them out as challengers a good few weeks ago, and I'm not going to change my position on that.
Coach?
No, I agree with that. It's a long, long way. Barring the Belfast Giants having a complete and utter collapse and the Steelers going on a superb run, I just can't see it.
Right, well, moving on to the travel up to Edinburgh for the next game against the Capitals. The last time we were there, it was the coach got very, very angry as we took quite a bad loss to the Capitals. This time it was pretty straightforward. A 7-2 win for the Belfast Giants, 2 for Shields, 3 for Whitecotton, 1 for Elfring, 1 for Mason, and for the Caps, Lean Weber and Portwood. Davey, you got to watch this on the webcast. Now, we know we had a bit of a moan about the webcast last time. You eventually got on the webcast this time.
Yeah, I did. And it was the end of the first period. Unfortunately, the score was 6-1. So I didn't. I still have to see most of the goals. I'm waiting on the Edinburgh Capitals highlights package coming out to see them. But, you know, this game was over before. You've got guys like Dustin Whitecotton on a 6-point night. You know, the guys really turned it on Sunday night. And another poor defeat from earlier in the season now avenged. We did it against Coventry. Whenever the next time we played Nottingham after they beat us, we put them away. We've done it now against Edinburgh. We've only 5 regulation losses all season. You know, that's one thing that the team is doing is they've learned from mistakes that they've made along the way. And they went back into Edinburgh there. And there was every game away from home was a potential bananas. Skin, but these guys, as they've been tagged the Road Warriors, you know, it's credit to them. They've gone in there really, really professional the first 20 minutes, and it gives you the opportunity to put Dicko in for the likes of, I think Dicko was in for 12-13 minutes in the third period, and it's given Stephen Murphy an extra 20 minutes off. he's still got an awful lot of rubber to face for the rest of the season and the playoffs coming up. So any night we can get him, that's two or three games now in a row we've been able to get him a wee bit of time off. So absolutely brilliant stuff.
Coach, we look at that top line. I know this is something we've talked about between the three of us the last couple of days. We look at that top line, however, Shields with two, White Cotton with three, Jeff Suez with four assists, is including his 200th career assist. They battered, between the three of them, they battered the Edinburgh Capitals.
Yeah, a wee bit like we discussed, you know, on the Saturday night, it was the second line that came to the fore, and on Sunday night, it was that top line. And, you know, I suppose that's a sign of a good team on any given night. Different lines and different individuals stand up, and that's exactly what we've done in Edinburgh. And a convincing victory, and, you know, kind of going back to what I said initially after the defeat, you know, the Belfast Giants, the strength of our team should be as such that whenever we go and play the Edinburgh Capitals, we should be picking up the 2 points every single night. And as I say, that's exactly what we did. And again, another thoroughly professional performance from the guys.
Dave, sorry, Paddy.
Not to go backwards from Sunday night to Saturday night, but I'm going to a little bit. You're talking there, Coach is talking about, you know, that on any night, the different lines taking up the goal scoring mantle. On Saturday night, Adam Keefe made a play for Evan Cheverie. That when I was watching it live on TV, I thought it was Chris Higgins. Yeah. It was a cross-ice pass, actually, I think, from Higgins that Kiefer's taken behind him, stick the skate, and then wee bit of sauce on it, wee bit of a saucer pass to Cheverie. And, you know, with no offence to Adam Kiefer, you know, that's your third line tough guy making high-skilled highlight reel plays. That's the confidence that's running through this team. Just absolutely fantastic.
It was an absolutely stunning pass as well. I know that I think Todd Kelman was on Twitter giving a bit of, they said he needs to change his Twitter handle. They add a bit of sauce onto it, but it was fantastic. Coach, like I say, last time we spoke about the Edinburgh Capitals, you were very forthright in your opinions in regards to the Edinburgh Capitals. They are adrift at the minute. Well, I say adrift. They're only 3 points behind the Flyers. Let's go back on that. They're not adrift at the minute, but they're still not competing in this league.
I've reasonably strong views on this. I just wonder what the Edinburgh Capitals as a club, as an organization, are gaining out of being in the Elite League. You know, what was the attendance on Sunday night? Was it 600-700 max?
600-700.
You know, they're struggling to get 600-700 people in their building. Now, I'm sure quite a few of those were Giants fans as well that maybe travelled up and what have you for the game after the Sheffield game on the Saturday night. It just seems to be a continual struggle. I like things done professionally. I think for our league to be recognised as a professional league, all the teams, and there's one or two other teams that could be brought into the mix here. The Edinburgh Capitals don't start filling up their roster really until kind of late October, early November, before you can actually look and say, they've a full roster in now. But that stage, the horse is bolted. They're right down at the bottom of the league. And, you know, bar picking up the odd victory at home against the Flyers or, you know, okay, they beat the Coventry Blaze who have been having a very average season by their usual, but, you know, I just feel that if the likes of a London appear on the scene or a Guildford Flames, clubs that will have a good sound structure, a good sound base, a recognised fan base as well, I just wonder whether that would be a more pertinent type club to invite into the league and maybe let the Edinburgh Capitals go and try and rebuild their organisation in some way. I have always said this, I'm sorry, I know I'm doing my usual, Paddy, but I've said this on many occasions. You know, in Edinburgh, it's one of the wealthiest cities in the United Kingdom. It is one of the highest student population rates as well. The Edinburgh Capitals have to surely be able to do more to entice more people into their building on any given night. And I just think with maybe the likes of a London maybe coming to fruition, or maybe the likes of Guildford Flames, a recognised hockey town, as it were, you know, quite a successful franchise, a bit of money behind them, fan base there. I just wonder whether or not they would maybe bring a wee bit more to the Elite League than the Edinburgh Capitals.
Davey, your opinions on this? I know we've got one in Edinburgh, we've got one in Cardiff. We don't have a team in London, and we've got a team in Belfast. How important is it that we retain a team in Edinburgh?
I think it's important just from a, you know, a UK hockey history. You know, there's been a team in Edinburgh for a lot of years, and it's a good trip for people to make. It's making up that four-team Scottish sort of rivalry that they're trying to build on. But coach is right. That rivalry's came in, and Dundee seem to have kicked on. Bray Head are getting 3,000 of some games. You know, Fife was always a noisy wee sold-out barn. Edinburgh just don't seem to be able to get a crowd in. That has to be to do with the standard of hockey that they're producing. You know, they always get good goaltending, and they're going to get the odd freak result. With no disrespect to them, beating us was a freak result. Beating Nottingham there the week before was a freak result. And they go through wee spells where they can put a wee spell of form together. But over the course of a season, at this stage of the season, they've played the guts of 40 games and won 10. It must be hard as a supporter to dig yourself out of the house on a Sunday night and say, come on, we'll go down here, knowing that you're playing the Belfast Giants here in hot form. The reason there were 670 people there on Sunday night was because the vast majority of the people that were going knew what they were going to see, which was going to be a turkey shoot, and that's exactly what they got. So, I don't know. Scott Neil has put a lot of his money in there and a lot of hard work over a lot of years, and you know, he needs commander for that, but he needs help as well, or they need more financial backing, or they need just to be on a better business foot and going forward. You know, it's just unfortunate that, as coach has already said, you know, the league is getting a good standard of parity that any team on any given night can't beat them, but the Caps is just that little standard below what you would expect from, if you want to call it, an elite league.
There are no highlights as yet of the game from Sunday night from Caps TV, but keep an eye on kingdomofthegiants.com. If there is any, we'll post them up there and we'll shout about it on our Twitter. Gentlemen, what I will ask you before we move on is that was another 4-point weekend. Coach, when can we actually start to talk about the title? I know that we listened to Paul Eddy earlier on, and he says, you know, there's still a lot of hockey to be played, and, you know, we're taking it game by game. But let's look at the table. We are 15 points ahead. The nearest team, where they win all their games, would be Dundee. It would take an epic collapse for the Belfast Giants not to lift the Elite League title at this point. Come on.
Yeah, I think as it currently stands, we're 17 points ahead.
Yeah.
So we are from Dundee, albeit Dundee have three games in hand. As I said earlier on, Paddy, it's going to take a serious drop of form and for a couple of teams to go on a serious rampage of victories for the Belfast Giants not to pick up the league trophy. And you know, I think privately, Paul Eddy would be saying exactly the same thing. This team just has so much about it that I expect us now to go on and win the league. And it really genuinely would be a catastrophe for us not to go on and pick up that league trophy. And you know, we're talking about it now in answer to your question, but you know, if we continue on this vein of form, results go the right way, a loss here or there, you know, you could be talking by the late February, maybe at the latest early March, whenever we could potentially be lifting that Elite League trophy.
Davey, everybody's fake Yorkshireman. David Sims came in just before I interviewed Paul Eddy, came in, shook Paul Eddy's hand and said, that's about it now, lads. You know, I think you're done. I think you've it all wrapped up. Paul Eddy was very, reserved in his response. And saying, you know, there's a lot of hockey to be played. There is a lot of hockey to be played. We still have to play the Nottingham Panthers and the Sheffield Steelers at least another, was it, 3-4 times each? But where do you think we stand?
Certainly in the box seat. You know, if you'd rewind the clock 6 months and said to us that we'd be sitting in the middle of January talking about, are we going to win the league before the end of February? You know, you'd bit somebody's hand off. But you introduced me at the start of the show as a Statman, Paddy. You know, the Giants are still running at 90%. We've won 9 of our last 10 games. Dundee Stars, 50%. Brayhead Clan, 40%. Panthers, 5-3-1-2 in their last 10. You know, the only team with any real semblance of form is Sheffield, and we've talked about them already. They're too far back. It's kind of a position now that we're happy to be in. There is still a lot of hockey to be played, and you don't want to scud yourself. Quick mention to Tony Smith. Thanks for, you know, giving us a little bit of impetus over the last few weeks. You know, sometimes it's, you know, what's the old saying? Sometimes better to say nothing and be thought a fool than open your mouth and remove all doubt. But, you know, we're certainly in the best position. We've scored the most goals. We've conceded the least goals. We're a tough unit. You know, we've a lot of penalty minutes there. We're a team tough this season. And I'll say it again. I like this team. It's easy to talk about a team that's performing so well, but, you know, don't want to say it. You know, that we're league champions, but we're certainly our league champions elect at the minute.
it's a good position for us to be in. Moving on, a couple of weeks ago we spoke to Evan Chevrier, our top point scorer for the Belfast Giants. Close behind him is our top goal scorer for the Belfast Giants is Kevin Surrett. I got to speak to Kevin earlier on today, and I start off just basically by asking him to reflect on the weekend, especially the game against the Sheffield Steelers.
It was a great weekend for us. We saw Sheffield, we knew it was going to be a big game, and we knew that they thought if they got a win there, that they kind of could start clawing back at us, and we didn't want that to happen, so we came in hard and played great, got a good win, which is always tough in Sheffield. I think they won 6 or 7 or 8 in a row there, and then went into Edinburgh and had a quick first period, and it was pretty much over from there. So it was just a great weekend overall.
Well, you joined the Belfast Giants from Germany around a year ago. Doug Christensen brought you in. How did that signing come about?
I was gonna sign actually in Belfast at the start of last year, and do the school thing, but it just wasn't all coming together in time, and I had offers in Germany that kind of had a deadline on them as well. So I decided, to stay in Germany one more season. Mm-hmm. And then come around Christmas, there's a few things going on with that team, money problems and the rink and just our living, like our apartment and stuff, that as a family, we made a decision to make a move. And we phoned Doug and he told us that Fournier had an injury and there was a spot open. So the deal came together.
It was great. You came in and in the 32 games you played in, you scored almost 40 points. And again, this season, you're well over a point a game. The Elite League obviously suits your style of play.
Yeah, I like it. I mean, I'm really enjoying it. I like the speed of the game, and it's a little more physical than Germany. And we have 11 imports, so you're always playing with great players, and the British guys are great. So it makes it easy. Makes it easy to get points when you're playing with everyone. Everyone's at the same skill level. So it's just a fun game of hockey.
Is it that it's more, I think that's some things that a lot of the guys say, that it's more of that North American style in the Elite League, that it is more physical than playing in Germany. Is that, would you prefer playing in that style of play?
Yeah, I mean, I prefer, I don't know if I prefer, I guess I prefer it. I'm more of a physical guy, but I enjoyed my time in Germany as well, like playing a different style where it's more skating and more skill and kind of systems oriented, but here is great too. And it's just all about kind of adapting to where you play. But I think overall, the more North American style probably suits me a little bit better than the European style.
We spoke to your linemate Evan Chevrier a couple of weeks ago about his move and when he made the decision to come from North America and ply his trade in Europe, but it was a conscious decision to see the world, sort of thing. Is that where you stand as well? I know you were playing in you had a bit of time in the Reading Royals and the Bingham Senators, and then you made that move to Germany. Was that a case of let's take this trade and see where it'll take me?
Yeah, I think it was along the same lines. I went to the States to school and had a year or two, and kind of made a decision that if I didn't get a permanent job in the American League or after a year or two, then maybe we'll look the European route. And we just got married the summer after my second season in the States, and my wife, she really was excited as well to see what Europe has to offer. And we'd heard from other players that, you know, you can make some pretty decent money over there, and the schedule is lighter, and you get to do some traveling. So we tried our best to get over there, and we ended up in Germany, and, you know, we haven't looked back since.
Absolutely. Why not, eh? This season's been great success for the Belfast Giants so far. What differences have you seen from the back end of last season with Doug Christensen's Giants to Paul Eadie's Giants, considering that, let's say, most of the team that have been retained have been the same? What's the difference between those two sides?
I don't know. It's hard to say. I think both teams were very good teams last year. Nottingham was in the league and they were a really class team as well. So it was tough. And, I was in there the first half of the season, so I didn't really see, we weren't really in this position last year where we had a big lead on teams and stuff like that. Yeah. But I don't know. I think just this year, maybe we have a little more experience, older guys, and in this, like in professional hockey, that makes a big difference. And I think this year, with the addition of some really experienced players with kind of the core guys that they decided to keep, we're just a really internally hungry team. We don't make too many mistakes. And I think I think every individual on our team takes pride in winning games. And we take pride in playing the game right. And it's not like a rah-rah team. It's just all business, to tell you the truth. And like the Sheffield game, we knew it was going to be a big game. And we want to keep stretching that lead on teams. We don't want to, give teams any points on us. And I think that shows in how we play. We don't want to give any teams, doesn't matter what spot in the league they are, any more points. We just want to keep building that lead. Like we're taking, I think we enjoy it.
When you look at the back end of last season and you look at the sting of the overtime loss to the Nottingham Panthers in the playoff final, then retaining that core of players like yourself, Adam Keefe, Daryl Lloyd, et cetera, do you think that the retention of those players and the chemistry between you guys has been a real key to how we got off to such a great start and have been able to hold this lead?
Yeah, I think that definitely helps when you have a bunch of core guys that all get along and they all play hockey. I mean, in my view, play hockey the right way.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you have a new coach come in, and to have a big group of core guys, it kind of makes that transition easier.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone doesn't have to get to know each other and everything. Not everything's different. There's still that common ground. And then the guys that were brought in, they've just kind of fitted nicely to the group. And it's just been great so far.
You've been in the elite league, as I say, for about a year now, and you look around at you say about there's 11 imports, and you look around at the British talent around you. You've got like Craig Peacock, Colin Shields, Mark Garside, etc., and then the local lads and G and Deco and Robbie Brown. How successful do you think it is for when you're working with these guys to help developing, especially the young local guys on the team?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a huge part of the future of, ice hockey in Britain and Ireland and Northern Ireland and everywhere involved with this league. Cause I mean, there's tons of good players, but you want to keep seeing good players develop, and it's kind of up to each team and each player and imports and the older British guys to try to help out those guys. And hopefully they can learn from us as well. And it just adds to development.
Mm. And in regards to your own career, say you spent a lot of time in juniors and college in your native Manitoba, then ECHL, AHL, Germany. What does hockey hold in the future for Kevin Surratt? Is hockey going to provide more for you, or do you have other plans?
Well, it's tough to say right now, to be honest. I plan to play for a few more years at least.
Yeah.
As long as I can stay healthy, we're having a great time. My family, like in that sense, and I'm having a great time. I'm doing my MBA as well right now, so that's something I'm trying to do to set myself up for life after hockey. And it's just going to kind of be see what comes along. I mean, I'd like to stay in the game, but it'd have to be on my terms, and it'd have to be a special situation, and or else I'll be looking to do something else with owning a business or starting or buying in or something along those kind of lines.
Well, as I say, you're a Manitoba man, and how important, just on a side note, do you think it was for the Winnipeg to get the Jets back into the NHL?
For Winnipeg, yeah, it was great. The city's been longing for a team since the Jets left, and it's it's just a hockey city and hockey province through and through. And now to have them back, I mean, it's just for the fans and for the businesses and for everyone, it's just a great thing for Winnipeg.
And then I'll come back to the Giants. So we've got a fantastic chemistry in that line with Evan Chevrier and Chris Higgins, Craig Peacock stepping up when he's needed. And that you're leading the scoring, but you're rivaling your own line mate and Evan Chevrier for that position. What's the secret of success of you guys? Because it's fantastic to watch. You seem to have a real empathy with each other on the ice.
Yeah, I think like you said, we feed off each other pretty well. I think each guy brings a little something different to the line, and it just seems to cover all the bases that you need for a good line. And we get along, and I think we all want to do well, and we all work hard, and that's just helping us to our success this year. It's not rocket science. I think with our line, we work hard, and then hopefully good things happen.
Well, there's still a lot of hockey to be played. Nobody really wants to make the call too early. But in the position that we're in, and is it just a case of keeping bodies healthy and the concentration in place from here right to the final day in Nottingham to keep this team successful?
Yeah, no, I think it's just doing what we've been doing, just kind of staying pretty even keel and just going about our business and trying to expand that lead. And you know, it's kind of in our hands right now, so it's up to us to keep going. So I don't think with the team we have, we're gonna take our foot off the pedal at all.
And then one last question: how's the city of Belfast been treating you and your family? Have you enjoyed your time?
Yeah, no, we've loved it. Treated like the team itself treats us great, and then the city is just a huge bonus. When we came last year, I knew a few guys like Paul Dennisett and Malcolm McMillan and that had played here before. But we loved it. We wanted to sign back and cheer, and that's why we did, because of the city. And, it's great. People are friendly. We couldn't be happier living here.
And thanks again to Kevin for his time. Coach, We spoke about Chevrier and or as Dave Sims calls him, Chevrier. We talked about it the other week, and you know, on that line we talk about it week in, week out. But Surrett, he is another key part of the Belfast Giants, and he's an absolute force going forward.
I said it towards the end of last season. You know, it was one of the best signings by Doug Christensen, and bringing Surrett into the Belfast Giants lineup. You know, he was phenomenal last season for us, gave us a real spark heading into the final stretch. And this season, he's just been absolutely phenomenal. You know, 49 points from 38 games. And like, he's popped up with, 22, 23 goals now as well this season. He's just an absolute machine, and puts up assists as well. So he's not just a goal scorer, he's a setup man as well. And he just does it all. You know, that second line for me are an incredibly hard-working unit, up and down the ice. They know their defensive responsibilities, and they're incredibly effective at their role and what they're paid for, and that's putting the puck in the back of the net and setting up plays for other guys. And Kevin Surrett has just been an absolute revelation. I really hope that we keep him here in Belfast for years to come.
I agree with you. He's one of these players that is Davey, he's a big game player.
Yeah, and he came in, as Coach said, he came in at Christmas last year, and a bit sad that we couldn't have had him a bit earlier in the season, because who knows what a difference he could have made. He made a huge difference to our club. I remember Coach talking about at the end of last season when we were talking about our MVPs, and I think Coach picked Surrett as his, and despite him only playing, you know, less than probably half the games, and that's the kind of impact the guy has had. And as Coach says, he'd be a player that you'd want to be getting a contract down front of Toot Sweet here, you know, try and get we talked about it earlier in the season, that what I believed we had coming in this season that was an advantage over other teams, if we go back to the old podcast, was the chemistry that the players had played together before. And you can't buy that. You know, Sheffield tried to buy a team. Nottingham have tried to buy two or three teams this season. and Cardiff, I don't know what they're doing with their money. But, you know, the chemistry that the likes of Kevin Surratt and Evan Chevrolet haven't been in Belfast before, Jeff Swayze, you know, all these guys being in Belfast before was so important. And Kevin Surratt has picked up where he left off at the end of last season, which has just been flying. He's been flying since he came to the town, and long may it continue.
One of the things I pointed out in that interview, and one of the things I'll ask yourself about, I'll start yourself, Davey, is keeping that core, that sting of the OT loss to the Nottingham Panthers at the very end of last season, and how that whole game went down, coming back from two goals down, forcing it into overtime, you know, but being done by that Jordan Fox goal. Retaining the core, that's obviously had its effect on the Giants.
That's been the most crucial thing. I just spoke about it there. I think for us, it's been the most crucial. You know, we retained that core. Paul Eady came in and made some absolutely top drawer signings in Dustin Whitecott and Calvin Elfring, Cody Brookwell. Guys he brought in himself after the vast majority of the roster was in place, you know, has spurred us on. But to answer your question, I believe the chemistry that we had and carried over from last season, the camaraderie, boys playing together, Keith Lloyd, Garside, to be able to keep a third line like that intact in this league and add good British players, bringing in Kevin Phillips, who's been absolutely solid on the blue line, and developing your young guys who have been here for a few years now, Gareth Roberts getting more regular ice time. This club, you know, getting the big D man, Cody Brickwell, was key as well, but to have that nucleus of a team was absolutely critical to us getting off. You don't lose a league you don't win a league in September, but you can certainly lose one. And we came out of the blocks flying, and we've just kept the pace.
Coach?
I agree with everything that Davey said there. You know, the scary thing is, I actually think, unlike the Nottingham Panthers of last year, I actually think we could keep again the nucleus of this team together going forward over the next year or two as well. I genuinely do. You know, I know that the guys absolutely love, it sounds cliche, doesn't it? You know, you see it in every bloody press release from every club, from every player. But I know that the guys love the city, love the organisation. You know, as Todd Kelman alluded to on one of the previous podcasts that he was on a couple of months ago, you know, not once has a check bounced. All the players are paid in time. They're put up in nice apartments. You know, people like Kevin, who's here with his wife and child, Evan Chevrolet, the same with his wife and child, they're all looked after incredibly well by the organisation. And again, Chevrolet alluded to it in your interview with him last week, Paddy. You know, players look for stability. You know, if you went back to the East Coast League or the American League, you could be up, down, you could be traded here, traded there. Whereas over here, you're looked after incredibly well. You know you're going to be with, unless you have a terrible, terrible season, you know you're going to be with that organisation for the entire year. And that stability means so much to players. And, you know, players like Keith and Lloyd, couldn't imagine either of those two guys playing for any other club in the UK. And I honestly think that those types of guys will still be here for the next year or two, as long as the club makes sure that they look after them, which I know that the club already do.
And thanks to Kevin again for coming on the show. It was really greatly appreciated. Gentlemen, a quick scout around the Elite League and the latest sort of news. A few bits and pieces to talk about. First of all, Kevin Harvey's been given a one-game suspension for a check on Brad Plumpton on Sunday night in a game between the Coventry Blaze and the Cardiff Blaze. I mean, the Cardiff Devils. that's what I was looking for.
Sorry, man.
Coach, Coach, I think we've all seen this hit. We've all seen the incident. Kevin Harvey rightly getting that suspension, yeah?
Oh, 100%. It was an awful hit in Plumpton. One thing that stood out for me on that, or two things. One, it was an absolutely dreadful hit. And I thought, and I've said on many occasions, I still believe that Tom Darnell is the best ref in the league. But he missed that one, and that was a big, big miss. The second point was, not one Cardiff Devil player retaliated towards Harvey. Now, see if that happened in our team, Keith, any of the guys, any of our team, I have no doubt whatsoever would have reacted to that hit. It was an awful hit from behind into the boards, and not one Cardiff Devil went towards Harvey at all. Now, right. Plumpton then ended up having to get up and go and drop the gloves with him, and you know, it was an awful hit and a well-deserved ban, in my opinion.
Well, it's not the first time we've seen that from the Cardiff Devils. You look at the incident between Keefe and Conboy. Now, of course, we've got our own opinions on what happened there and the suspension stuff, but Conboy was down for a while and not one Cardiff Devil came anywhere near it. And then you look as well at the wider Elite League. Kelsey Wilson has just arrived back in the Elite League, and he took a slash at Simon Ferguson in a break and play, and nobody went for him. Davey, is the Elite League losing its edge?
I think there could be issues with the Cardiff dressing room this season. You know, it's maybe not as tight as perhaps other teams are. I agree with Coach there. You know, had the shoe been on the other foot, I think, you know, the bell would have had to be rung to be answered. You know, it's that Kelsey Wilson slash last season was disgusting, and I'm not sure whether he got suspended for it or not. I can't remember off the top of my head, but it was an awful slash. But I think Kevin Harvey's been quite lucky in this instance, just to take the one game. It was a bit of a naughty hit, that's for sure. So go check it out. Paddy has the highlights up on Kingdom of the Giants.
If you one thing as well before we move on, Davey's asked you about you were very forthright in your discussion in your opinions on turtling, and that's exactly what Kevin Harvey did when Plumpton went for him.
He's been at it all season, hasn't he? I think Jeff Swayze has offered him a dance on more than one occasion, and he's. He hasn't been willing. He's been willing to pick on smaller guys. I think Coach called him out on one of the webcasts. Was it Kevin Phillips he ended up having a...
Yeah, well, you're right, Davey. You know, he Swayze and Keefe have both offered him out on a few occasions. I remember one occasion, Keefe dropping the gloves with him, rolling up the sleeves ready to go, and Harvey just skating to the bench at the Odyssey. I think it was a night that Coventry won 5-0. But, you know, I just don't like that type of player. I just don't like it. I don't like it in hockey. I think hockey's a physical sport. And, you know, if you play a certain brand of hockey, you just have to answer the bell on occasions. And, you know, he was very quick to drop the gloves with Kevin Phillips and Calvin Elfring that night. But the second Jeffrey Swayze stepped into that Elfring one especially, Harvey did not want to know. He was straight down looking for the box, and I just don't like that in hockey at all. Hockey's a man sport. Answer the bell whenever you're asked to.
And well, if the rumours are to be believed, Kevin Harvey won't be with the Coventry Braves for very long. The rumours are that he has handed in his notice and that he will be departing from Coventry very soon. We'll wait and see what happens there. Elsewhere, the Nottingham Panthers only picked up 1 point from the weekend. An overtime loss to the Blaze. Kelsey Wilson scoring against his former team. One thing I'll note about that is when he did score, I think there were a number of Nottingham Panthers players behind the glass, right behind the goal, and he punched the glass where they were in a sort of a celebration in front of them. Quite interesting with regards to his former teammates.
There's hardly any of the former teammates there. They all disappeared.
But Coach, what are we blaming? Injuries or suspensions?
I'm blaming suspensions on that one. Now, I know that they ended up with 12 skaters, but if you add in Grimaldi and who was the other suspension from Sunday night? And Callis. You know, they would have had 14 skaters. Okay, still short bench, but, you know, those two suspensions have absolutely killed them. Listen, there's no getting away from the fact that the Nottingham Panthers have suffered injuries this season. It is pure fact, but they have also signed 19 imports. Now, if you look at the amount of suspensions that they've also picked up along the way for various different things, you know, I still think the vast majority of games, they have iced at least 10, if not the maximum 11 imports on more occasions than you would actually think. So all this crying about injuries this, injuries that, not so sure. You've signed 19 imports. What I will hold my hand up and say, I can understand why they're maybe not being as fluent as usual as the Panthers were last season, is that it is very difficult to gain that chemistry with your line mates if it's continually changing night in, night out. Brandon Benedict, one of the best forwards that the Elite League has seen, you know, playing forward one minute, playing defence the next. You know, that's got to disrupt things. You know, Belfast, we should never have let Brandon Benedict leave these shores ever. And, you know, he's been playing D for most of the season, so he has for them. And for me, it's a mixture of both, but more so to do with the suspensions as opposed to, the chemistry as opposed to anything else.
Davey, you're the Nottingham Panthers' biggest fan. What are your opinions?
Coach is right. They've been rocked by injuries and suspensions this season, but they've had the capital expenditure there to go and replace them, and it's just something that we're going back to. It doesn't matter how much you spend, you can't buy chemistry, and, you know, it's very unfortunate for them. You know, they were defending won themselves 3 out of 4 trophies last season, and they were trying to defend a few of them. Unfortunately, they'll probably still be able to claim some sort of grand slam, but you know, I'm not their biggest fan. I don't think some of the hierarchy within the club acts with any sort of dignity. You know, you have to be a good good winner to be a good loser, and you know, I don't really have much time for the custard coloured club.
I have to say, the video that you sent me earlier in the week that we'll hopefully get the release later in the season would be a very enjoyable one to put out. Yeah. Looking elsewhere, just quickly to wrap this up, this section up, is the Dundee Stars picked up that import D-man that Jeff Hutchins wanted for Christmas. Dylan Quayle arrives from the Brampton Beast. He mustn't have got on with Matt Suderman.
That was a funny one because, you know, they only brought that guy in at the tail end of well, I think they brought him in June time, and you know, for second pro year in hockey and just after coming out of university, he had the potential you'd have thought to be a good East Coaster, and he's ended up in Dundee. His pedigree's there to be assessed now, but that's what Dundee needed. That's, you know, I don't think for 1 minute Jeff Hutchins thinks that Dundee can go on and win the league, but I think they'll be really, really pushing hard to win that conference because they'll want that number two seeding spot for the playoffs, because that gets them a good draw against potentially like a Cardiff or a Fife, someone down there that's scratching for a result, and they will be targeting the Final Four weekend as a big, big scalp this year.
Well, I was going to say, take away the fact that the winning the Gardiner Conference will get you second seed. Coming second in the league will get you second seed. Do they have a chance in that?
I think so, yes. The standings don't lie. You know, they've got games in hand over the Brayhead Clan, who are the closest team to them, and they've played the same amount of games as Nottingham and Sheffield, and they're ahead of them on merit. That's the conference system's there for to bring a bit of parity to the table at the end of the season, and Dundee have played very, very well. You know, the 16 regulation, the 50% of their games have won in regulation. They've only lost 10 games all season. And, you know, the Panthers have lost 10, Sheffield have lost 11. So, you know, the coach, you're at it. The stats don't lie. You know, it's credit to the organisation, and they've done that with a very, very small budget, and they've done that with a D-man short. So, you know, credit to them. I hope they hang in there in second place.
Coach, is this a success story for the conference system?
Yeah, it probably is in some ways, Paddy. You know, I look at the Dundee Stars, and there's two or three of their players were absolutely standout players. A couple of guys who I would love to see in a Giants jersey, Rory Rollick being one of them, an absolutely fantastic pickup by Jeff Hutchins to bring into this league. Another couple of guys, last time I looked, both of them were in the top 10 in the Elite League standings for goal scores, or for top point scores, Nico Cecchetti and Jerry Polistrone. I think Cecchetti had something like 64 points, 65 points, something like that, from 38, 39 games. Like, that is phenomenal shooting. And, you know, Polistrone wasn't far behind. And Jeff John's done a very, very good job this year of putting together a really good team. And fair play to him. You know, he seems to have built a really strong, tight, cohesive, skillful team. Guys who know how to put the puck in the back of the net. And players like Rory Rollick, who's superb at the back, but also superb going forward as well. Brilliant to see. Well done.
The only thing for them was, despite going so well in the league, here's a segue for you, they weren't able to reach the semi-final of the Challenge Cup. They were knocked out by Sheffield, who will go on to face Nottingham in the greatest rivalry in world universal hockey. Two legs in the semi-final. We'll come to Belfast semi-final in a bit. We'll move on. We've got another interview. Now, this is an interesting one. How did this come about, Coach?
This came about via Twitter. I think it was one of Killer's friends. Sent out a tweet basically just saying, you know, how great it was to see an old friend of his doing so well for the Belfast Giants. And an article had appeared in one of the top Canadian newspapers. And I was trawling through the various tweets going down the timeline, and I saw one from Joe Bowen basically saying, I would love to be come to Belfast. I would love to come and call a game. You know, and asking were there any fixtures over the Olympic period, because he was going to plan a trip. And I just sent a tweet off, just basically saying, you know, sent him off with a fixture list, and he came back again. And then it just led on to you sending him an email and setting up this interview. And yeah, it really is fantastic, I have to say.
We will give we'll include the comical aspect that one of the founders of this podcast, Aaron Kernahan, did say that he would start following us on Twitter only if we got an interview with Joe Bowen. Joe Bowen has been for 30 years the voice of the Toronto Maple Leafs. He's called over 3,000 games, and now Aaron Kernahan follows us on Twitter because, ladies and gentlemen, our interview with Joe Bowen.
It's not often on A View from the Bridge you get to talk to a guy whose voice is synonymous around the hockey world, but the way things have gone, we get to do that right now. The voice of the Toronto Maple Leafs, Mr. Joe Bowen. Sir, it's a pleasure and honour to have you on A View from the Bridge. Thanks for joining us.
Well, it's my honour, Patrick. Being of Irish extraction, I have a soft spot in my heart for that wonderful nation and country, and I enjoy all of it. I'm tickled pink that there's hockey being played in Belfast.
Maybe we can turn you into a fan by the end of this.
Oh, absolutely. Well, Owen Nolan was a member of our team a number of years ago. Absolutely. And I know that you've honored him as being the sole member from Belfast to have made the National Hockey League, if I'm not misinformed. And he was a great young man too.
Absolutely. And I think Sean Thornton in Boston is also of Belfast extraction.
I did not know that. Yeah. I did not know that.
But you yourself, you started calling games for the Toronto Maple Leafs over 30 years ago. You know, how did your career develop into being a play-by-play guy? You know, I know you grew up as a goalkeeper, I believe.
Oh, I'm still playing, Patrick. I'm 62 and I still make an effort to get out there. I just don't move very well anymore, and I don't fall down anymore. So I'm playing the angles. But the reason that I got into broadcasting was I couldn't play well enough. So my dream of making the National Hockey League when there were only six teams kind of came to an end while I was in high school. But my aunt, who lived down in the United States, she thought that I was going to be, because of my loud voice, a circus barker, which got my mother very upset. But as it turned out, it's pretty much what I do.
Mm. Well, you've called over 2,000 games for the Toronto Maple Leafs, so some great times, and there's some great games in there. You know, I think back to maybe that 1993 run after the arrival of Doug Gilmour from Calgary, and you know, the controversy that ended against Gretzky's Kings. What for you have been the main highlights of your time calling Maple Leafs games?
Well, yeah, I think the real highlight is the athletes themselves. I honestly can say that in the 32 years that I've done this, I'm not sure I could single out one player that I said, you know, I have no time for. That their personality or their conviction to the game or something rubbed me the wrong way. I think the athletes have been unbelievable. I know I've watched hurling and I'm completely stunned by the athleticism of those lads. But when you have to add the fact that it's not a natural thing to skate, that you have to be able to go almost 30 miles an hour, handle the object of the game with a 6-foot stick, and have that kind of athleticism, I think that it is without question the most difficult game in the world to master. Almost every other sport, you have the ball or something in your hand, or you are doing something that you learn to do when you are 1 year old, and that is run. Mm. And this is something that is completely different. Now, there's been some, you know, as far as games are concerned, some great highlights, and certainly that run in 93, because our team, up until that point, under the ownership of Harold Ballard, there really wasn't an awful lot of hope that they had a chance to win the Stanley Cup. But after Ballard passed and the chain of command went different, Cliff Fletcher arrived, and after the big trade that you mentioned with Calgary that brought Doug Gilmour and Jamie McCowan and Rick Walmsley and others here, it turned the corner for the franchise. And ever since then, ownership has had its one goal, and that is to restore the Stanley Cup to Toronto, where it's been won 13 times.
Well, then since that 1993 win, you know, and I think, sorry, win for the Habs in the Stanley Cup, there hasn't been a Canadian team lift the cup in for Canada's game. You know, I think Vancouver would be the most recent. You know, how close they came against the Boston Bruins. In that time, you know, we've seen Tampa Bay win, Carolina win, all these different teams around America. Maybe teams that back then, with the original six, you'd never have thought there'd even be hockey down there, never mind lifting the Stanley Cup. Do you think that's just purely down to statistics, with there only being seven teams north of the border, that it hasn't really travelled up there since the early 90s?
Yeah, everybody's goal is the same. Now the budget situation is all the same with the salary cap. Mm. So there's one team that wins and 29 losers. Mm. And everybody who doesn't win it is looking for the answer to get over the hump. And many times when you get into the postseason and into the playoffs, it just becomes a matter of A, health, and B, good fortune, and obviously having some talented players. And I've often said that the talent level from top to bottom in the National Hockey League is quite a bit shorter than people would imagine. And I've often said that it's attitude and atmosphere within the room and leadership within the group that pulls the group together, that allows them to play as a unit instead of 20 individuals. And that is a magical thing when it happens, because those teams are the ones that go on a roll and are the ones that are successful at the end of the season.
The Jets returned as part of when the Atlanta franchise returned to Winnipeg, to make that seventh team in north of the border. How important is it that there should be like more teams in Canada? I know Markham's forever talked about representation of Canada's game within the NHL. How important is that?
Well, I live in Markham, Patrick, and they're still talking about an arena here. They're still hoping to maybe get one. And if they do, I don't think there'll be any question that there will be expansion in the National Hockey League, and a team would end up in this market again. How it is orchestrated and how the ownership gets it together is going to be interesting in the next 5 or 6 months, I would think, through the summer. However, since the American dollar has not been the dominant factor in the league the way it was back in the 90s or the 80s, it has become a lot more viable for Canadian markets to compete against the American teams with the U.S. dollar. Couple that with the fact that there is a salary cap now, and so the New York Rangers can't be the New York Yankees and just outspend everybody with some sort of a luxury tax or whatever that they do in Major League Baseball. Then there are communities that obviously love this game, unlike cities in the United States who enjoy this game. And I think that we're going to see Quebec. I think we're going to see another team here in Toronto, and I wouldn't be surprised if in my lifetime a team in Saskatchewan, maybe Regina, got into the National Hockey League, because the passion for the sport out west is the same as it is here in the east. And I know that the people in Western Canada, a 500-kilometer ride is just a stretch of the legs to get to a game. So I wouldn't be surprised that we see some expansion there as well.
Looking back at your career, you've always alluded to the fact that you're a fan of the game. Is that love of the sport the key to being successful behind the mic?
I don't think it hurts. I think other people can probably do it. We've seen a number of broadcasters in the United States who are very good but are probably more weaned on Major League Baseball or American football. I think as far as a Canadian is concerned, I think that you have to have played the game and have the passion for the game and to understand to some extent what these guys are able to do that you as a youth could not, to really appreciate the sport. And it's like we all have golf sticks in our garage, but the sport that McIlroy plays and the one that I try to play are two completely different games.
I can understand that.
So that aspect of it, I think, helps me at least in what I do and how I perceive my job to be. I can appreciate them, and having played goal, I can appreciate when one goes through the wickets and how bad you feel and why it happened and everything else. So it's maybe a little bit of an easier situation for me to be empathetic with the players, having played it a little bit.
My two colleagues and friends on the show have taken the step into doing some play-by-play for the Belfast Giants this season in their game broadcasts. Given it's such a fast sport, like few others, there's no real time to fill in like in American football. You've got a lot of time to fill and analyze. What advice would you give to folks starting out in hockey broadcasting and play-by-play calling and how to develop themselves?
Well, there's a lot of downtime in hockey as well. Mm. The puck's in the neutral zone. It's really not imperative that you have to know exactly who has it and what's going on. But once the play proceeds into the offensive end, I think that's when you've got to get, you know, your game on and let it go. And I think the other thing that I've always done, and I've been blessed with having some people to do color commentary mm-hmm. with me that have a great knowledge of the sport and B, great senses of humor, and to have fun. Not all 82 of our games are gems. Some of them are dogs, and if you want to entertain some people, sometimes you have to have a little bit of fun and have some stories to tell and a few other things. So I think that's a key part of it, to enjoy the sport, enjoy the humor of it. Sometimes there's some awfully funny things that happen, but on the ice for no apparent reason, and I don't think that you can camouflage them. You just have to kind of enjoy them.
Well, it'd be remiss of me not to ask you at this point about your commentating style. You know, everybody's heard it. Everything. My favorite are your goalie references, you know, technicians of the tangled twine or officers of the of the oblong onion bag. But of course, your famous catchphrase is Holy Mackinac. So I'm going to ask you a question that you've probably been asked a million times before. Where did Holy Mackinac come from?
You know, I got it from my dad, and Patrick, my dad passed away before I entered high school, just when I was finishing up my primary grades. And I never got to ask him where he got it, but I would sit on his lap and we'd be watching the Friday night boxing matches from Madison Square Gardens, and some guy would get tattooed right on the pointy end of his chin, and down he'd go, and my dad would blurt out, "Holy Mackinac, did you see that?" Probably as opposed to a deleted expletive in front of a 6-year-old. Oh, yeah. So yeah. I never got to ask him that. And I did junior hockey and American Hockey League, and I was probably about 5 years into broadcasting the Maple Leafs. And the fellow who was doing color with me was a player agent at the time by the name of Bill Waters, and he became an assistant GM with the team later on. But he was doing color with me in Chicago, and our goaltender, Felix Potvin, made a great save. And I don't know why, but out of the recesses of my not-so-fertile mind, I blurted it out. And I would never have used it again, I don't think, except that Bill Waters almost fell off his chair laughing. And I thought, you know what, if I got that response from him, maybe I can use it again. And so I have. And my third boy, Sean, was diagnosed with leukemia when he was a year old. Mm-hmm. And we have been selling Holy Mackinac T-shirts and whatnot in efforts to raise funds for leukemia research. And Sean's now a 22-year-old strapping young man who's as big as a house.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. And the saying is not only just it's brought character to your own quality, it's called brought character to the game. It's fabulous. The obvious question to ask is, in your 30 years of hockey broadcasting the NHL, you've seen some magnificent players come and go in the game. There's always obviously the standout names in hockey that we all know, but for you, who's been the greatest you've had to call on?
The greatest that I've had to call. Okay, so that narrows things down, because yeah. I didn't do Bobby Orr, and yeah. I didn't do Rocket Richard or Frank Mahovlich or Dave Keon. I think the greatest player that I've had the pleasure of calling as far as the Leafs is concerned has been Matt Sundin from Sweden. But I think that I got to call a lot of Wayne Gretzky's games and watch him. There was really absolutely no one quite like him. Now, if you told me that I had to pick, I was going to be able to clone five guys, and I could have five Wayne Gretzky's, and they could play against somebody, who would I pick to play against them? I'd pick five Bobby Orrs, and I think I'd win the game with the Bobby Orr.
Always the way. And who do you think is the best in the game today? Who do you think is better? Who in the National Hockey League do you think is a standout player?
Well, I don't think that you would go wrong with picking Sidney Crosby.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I don't think that you would go wrong by picking Jonathan Toews. Mm. They're both very unique players, great offensive skill. But I think the one thing that they have learned very early on in their career is that there are two ends of the ice. Mm. And both of them work very diligently at their own end, and have good plus minus statistics because of that. And they call him the magic man. And I think in third spot, you'd probably find somebody like Pavel Datsyuk, who I think has just had a marvelous career with the Detroit Red Wings, who, year in and year out is in the running for the best defensive forward in the league while being an offensive juggernaut. So all three are all round players. Alex Ovechkin is a great offensive player and great on the power play and things of that nature, but I don't think that he is nearly the all-round player that those three players are.
I have to agree with you on Datsyuk, one of my own personal favourites, a fantastic player. Looking at the game itself, though, there's always talk about the role of fighting and aggression in the game. We look at last night's game that took place between Vancouver and Calgary. You know, Tom Sestito, who played in the UK here for the Sheffield Steelers during the lockout, has gained a bit of a notoriety in the Rogers Arena. But looking at the players you've had to call on and call on in the past, you know, we're talking about at the minute, you know, Cordon Orr, we're talking about Wendell Clark, and a name that stands out to UK fans is the former Coventry Blaze player, the late Wade Bielak. Fighting is always going to be part of this game, but how do you feel it? You know, has it developed in the sport? Is it more about the aggression, or is hockey losing its edge in any way?
Well, I know they're trying to get away from the quote-unquote staged fights where there really hasn't been any animosity or any reason for it, but there's always, it's a collision sport. It's not a contact sport. There are guys wielding six-foot clubs whacking you, and you're going to take exception to it, and there has to be some sort of a release to it. Otherwise, people are going to end up just using the clubs. So I think that it's here to stay. I think they're trying to get away from just having the one-dimensional player who is just there as the policeman and is involved in the stage fighting. And that's why someone like a Sean Thornton is so valuable to the Boston Bruins, because that fourth line is the best fourth line in the National Hockey League, and their coach will play them, and they can play. And that's, you know, where the Wendell Clarks of the league were able to do that and still have that edge to be involved in. Personally, I really enjoy the fighting as long as I'm not in it.
Well, so we all think
at my age, I don't need to be involved in that. I think I'll just stay up in the broadcast booth. Thank you very much.
A sound judge, sir, a sound judge. One of the recent talking points amongst Belfast Giants fans this season has been the retirement of jerseys. Like, in our very short history of the organisation, we've seen fit to retire six numbers. Now, they all hang on our arena. The discussion is to whether a rule of honour like the Toronto Maple Leafs have would be more important, given that the Maple Leafs themselves have only retired two numbers in Bill Barco and Ace Bailey's 5 and 6. Where do you stand on the issue of the criteria for honouring or retiring a shirt? It's a massive, massive honour to get that, but surely it must be a one special player that receives that honour.
I think so, Patrick. I like the idea of the Leafs being able to honor the number. And what I wish the National Hockey League would allow the Leafs to do is to put a commemorative patch on that number should it be worn by another player. So if someone wears number 27, there should be a patch on the number, maybe the home jersey that has something to say about Frank Mihalovic, and maybe on the away jersey, it signals Daryl Sittler. The same thing for number one that John Bauer and Turk Broda wore with such distinction. We had a perfect example last night where the Montreal Canadiens have retired so many numbers because of their great success and Stanley Cup success, that now we've got defensemen wearing 79 and 84 and 86, and I'm a bit of a purist. I like the smaller numbers, and that's why I like the idea of honoring the number, but I think that the league should allow teams to commemorate that honor by having something on that jersey as it is being played. I think the first thing that it would do is every broadcast from a different team coming into Toronto would say, you notice that patch, it's on so-and-so's jersey. That commemorates one of the greatest players of all time, Frank Mihalovic. And that honor then is in perpetuity. They're going to be mentioning that for forever. And I think that that's an important aspect, rather than just having your number like in Long Island, where Denny Potvin's number is hanging in the rafters, but it's just a number and there's nothing else. I love the way in Toronto where we have the figure and the picture of the player to go along with the number, so that you can look up and, oh yeah, that's Johnny Bauer. Yeah, I remember him. I remember seeing pictures of him, and it's just not a number. It becomes more of a person, I think, is more important.
And then, as you mentioned, a win for the Leafs last night against Montreal, but still a few problems after that Winter Classic victory over the Wings. So how do you see this season panning out at the Air Canada Centre?
Well, I think we kind of thought that the Winter Classic was the Stanley Cup final, because it took a week off after it and lost four in a row. So I think we've gotten back to playing the kind of hockey that Randy Carlyle likes, and that is a tough physical team that is miserable to play against and gets great goaltending and has opportunistic scoring. And I think we saw all of that against the Montreal Canadiens last night. It was an electric night. These two franchises are arch rivals, and there may not be a better rivalry in hockey than Montreal and Toronto, and yet we haven't played each other in the Stanley Cup playoffs since 1979. So hopefully that will change in the not-too-distant future.
The Olympics finally are just around the corner, Joe. What are you expecting from that? It's going to be Canada, obviously, the defending champions. It's going to be a fantastic tournament.
Yes, it will. It'll be interesting on the big ice surface how the North American teams, United States and Canada, are able to adjust to it, adjusting to the time change. Playing a lot of their games at 9 o'clock in the morning is going to be a bit of an adjustment for National Hockey League players who obviously have a very different routine over here, but the talent level is going to be off the charts, and that will be fun to watch, and I'm sure that the Russian crowds will be very boisterous, and it'll be a lot of fun, and they'll have a bit of a home ice advantage, I'm sure, and we'll see if Team Canada can wrestle another goal the way they did over in Vancouver when we had the home ice advantage.
Joe, it's been an absolute pleasure and honour to have you with us here on A View from the Bridge. I know you're off now to join the Maple Leafs in Phoenix. We really appreciate your time and hope that maybe someday we'll see you at a Giants game in Belfast.
Oh, I would love that, Patrick. I would enjoy seeing that for sure. I'm trying to, when Brian Burke was here, I was trying to convince him to have our training camp in Belfast. I thought that'd be a hell of an idea.
I don't know how much training would go on.
Exactly. We could do most of the training in the pubs.
That was a belter, Davey. What a guy.
Absolutely brilliant. Lovely interview, Paddy. Very good to hear, you know. Family from Londonderry, the guy's, you know, he's got roots in Northern Ireland, and you know, it's great to hear someone who's so highly thought of in the hockey world that would, you know, give time to three muckers in a podcast. That's this podcast has certainly started to get very big for its boots.
Coach, would you have him as your color commentator? Like, I assume you do play by play.
Well, I would like to think so. Or Ronan might find my size 11s up his backside, but no, it would be fantastic. I really would to see Joe over at the Odyssey sometime. And you know, I have to say, Paddy, I've listened to that. I know you had it stuck up on our SoundCloud account as on private there for us to listen to over the weekend. And I have to say, I've listened to it a couple of times now, and it was just absolutely fantastic. And you know, you can probably in some ways tell that he's got the Irish element to him, you know, very passionate guy about the sport. And I thought some of the questions put to him were superb. I thought you did really well with the questioning and some of the answers that we got. You know, it was interesting just to see what he had to say about the top players in the NHL now. And you know, he mentioned Ovechkin being one of the top players, but he didn't do a lot of work coming back the way, so he wouldn't be up there with you know, the likes of Sidney Crosby, who knows how to work in the, you know, in the Wayne Gretzky's office, as Murph would call it, but he also works back as well. And just thought some of the interactions, some of the answers were absolutely superb to listen to. Really, really good interview.
It was a delight to do. Sorry, David, just said it was a delight to do. The man was an absolute gentleman. I have to say, I will admit that I was very nervous speaking to him because you're talking about a guy who's, you know, known throughout the hockey world for,
of course,
you know, Holy Mackinac and you know. But before the interview, we spoke for about 5 minutes or so. He told me about, you know, his family over here, and he'd been over a few times and put me right at ease. And we had a lovely chat both before, during, and after the interview. And a nicer man you will not meet. And he's still playing in the 60s. Yeah, it was fantastic.
Absolutely. Brilliant to see.
And haven't had that from one legend in hockey, now for another. Davey, questions?
Yes, and just before we go on to the Ask Davey questions, one of the things that came out of the interview there, he was asked about what helps make a championship team. And I think his answer was attitude and atmosphere. Mm-hmm. And could you disagree with either of those things surrounding the Belfast Giants this season?
Absolutely not.
You know, we've got two of the ingredients that one of the top guys in the hockey world says you need to win a championship. So it can only be good. But going on to our Twitter questions, and it's a kind of, I suppose it's an NHL-led question to start. It's from WeFill56. That's what did we make of the Canucks Flame Brawl five fighting majors at point or at 1 second, and what happened with Tortorella during the interval?
Absolute belter, wasn't it? That's, you know, there have been fines thrown out and over the last couple of days, but I tell you what, like, I went into work the next day, or sorry, I went into work on Monday there, and even the guys in work who know nothing about hockey had seen it on Facebook, or they'd seen it on something, and they were asking me all about it, and, you know, what's it all about, and why was this happening? I thought that it was Tortorella going towards the locker room of the Flames as well. Guy's got passion. You know what I mean? You could see how angry he was when he saw that starting lineup, and his hand was forced to put out the likes of Sestito and whatever, just to take on McGrath. His hand was forced to do that. He didn't want to do it, and that's why he was so angry about it. But hey, it was good entertainment.
Coach Tortorella reminds me so much of Dave Whistle. Just that kind of fire and brimstone on the bench, and the screaming and shouting. But yeah. Listen, I love that side of hockey. Do I like the stage fights and things like that? No, most definitely don't. And I suppose that's what the NHL is trying to get away from. But, you know, that doesn't happen too often now in the National Hockey League. And, you know, I bet you one thing, guys, not one person left that building whenever that all kicked off. Nobody turns away from a fight. And it was great. It was great entertainment. And, you know, listen, as I said, if it was happening every single night, wouldn't be a huge fan of it. But as a one-off type thing to kind of get the game going and build that atmosphere and the electricity in the building, no problem with it at all.
I don't know if there's any truth that Connor Caldwell's been writing an open letter to Gary Bettman, but leave it hanging out. Moving on, FBFG 14. This is going to be a tricky one, and we'll have to really push through this quickly because I know we're pushed for time. An all-star elite first line for this season. I know Paddy and me get to vote in this, being members of the IHJ UK, but what's your thoughts, guys?
Coach, you go first on this one.
Let's pick a goalie quick.
Oh, for me, Craig Kowalski.
Even though he hasn't played very much this season?
I'd go for Stephen Murphy.
If you're just going on this season, then
this season's all-star team.
Okay, Stephen Murphy, 100%.
Okay, you need two D-men now.
Elfrig and Brickwell.
I saw the question before we came online there, David, I'm not going to lie, and I instantly went, I would not. Elfrig, to me, has been the stud of the league in terms of his defensive play, and that partnership with Cody Brookwell has just been absolutely superb. And I know we're going to come across Belfast Giants here, but there's a reason why the guys are at the top of the league. Elfrig and Brickwell for me as well.
I think we should probably give odd though, like Rolla, Gomar Pasha, not have had good seasons. Robbie Sandrock, you're leaving someone with a bomb of a shot. Henrik at the Blaze, but I can't disagree with you. From the first match down in, I got to see him, and it was our second game of the season. It was away in Cardiff. And I remember coming straight after the game and speaking to Paul Leady, and I think it was more or less my first question, what about Brickwell and Alfred? Unbelievable. So moving forward, there's a segue for you, Paddy. Moving forward, I need three forwards.
I know mine.
Go for it, Coach.
Dustin Whitecotton is centering my line. On my left wing. No, I'm going to go with a right wing first because I know my left wing will be slightly controversial. On my right wing, I'm going for Matt Francis of the Nottingham Panthers. Superb player. Would love to see him in a Belfast Giants uniform.
X-Factor player.
And on the left wing, someone who has impressed me every single time that I have watched him, is Thomas Kirk of the Cardiff Devils.
Oh, Paddy? A late arrival. See, I agree with you with regards to Dustin Whitecotton being the standout centreman, but then I look at Evan Cheverie and the way he's been playing at centre, and the points production that's been going on there has been phenomenal. And then if you're going to look at it, then you look at Ryan Ginnand. And you look at the goal that he scored against the Nottingham Panthers the other night on a breakaway. Another fantastic centre. It's a very difficult position, but I probably have to stick, and I have to agree with you, Dustin Whitecotton came in, a DEL centreman, and has probably been one of the standout guys in the league. Left and right wing, Sir Etton Higgins. I'm sorry, but those two guys, for me, have been our box office night in, night out. I feel sorry about leaving it, like taking Chevrolet out of that line and putting Ginnand in, but for the time, he's just the top of creation wise, been fantastic. But Higgins is box office. You can't not watch him. Every touch of the puck with his stick is just phenomenal. You know, and Sorrento's a powerful. I know you're trying to be. I just find it difficult. This team has been superb. And watching all these teams that we've played, be it home or away, that line of Sorrento, Cheverry, and Higgins, night in, night out, has stood up as being probably the best in the league. It's just difficult. Anyway.
I'm going to be a bit of a homer as well, Paddy, because I would find it very difficult to pick a Coventry Blues player or, God forbid, a Nottingham Panthers player on my team, coach.
We're picking quality here, guys.
I'll pick quality. Chris Higgins, every night and twice on a Sunday, he'd be on my team. Now, the Belfast Datsuk, as he's been given the handle, the hashtag on Twitter, the guy is highlight reel. Every time he's on the ice, you have to watch him. He's absolutely brilliant. Evan Cheverry, over 40 assists this season for the Giants in 30-odd games. A much more rounded player than he was the last time he came here. Not the all-out goal machine that he used to be. So Evan Cheverry centres it for me. And then, you know, you have the difficulty where you have players like Colin Shields, who's having another good season. Jeff Swayze, who's just a beast. He's got something 9-10 game winning goals. But I just don't break that lineup. That Cheverry.
So we've got Murphy, Elfring, Brookwell, Cheverry, Sorrett, and Higgins as the all-star team. We are Homer.
I tell you what, I wouldn't like to be a coach trying to pick six players from another team to give them a game.
I absolutely agree with you. And it does sound like they're going to be, if there are any fans from other teams listening to this show, going, that's a biggest load of bleep. But I can't see, maybe it is just because we watch them all the time, but I can't see anybody rivaling them. Nobody.
Well, the other thing is, Paddy, we, as said at the top there, we get the chance to vote, being in the association. I'd be very, very interested to see. Like last year, Nottingham Panthers stuttered their way to a championship, led by David Ling, and David Ling walked away with, a cardboard box full of awards at the playoff weekend. I'd be very interested to see high on earth, like you're talking about, we've picked six players that are off in the Belfast Giants. The coach has to pick a player of the year, I lad. You know, the players have to pick a player of the year, I lad. That's an incredibly hard task for this season. Don't want to pump anybody's tires up too much here, but for that Belfast Giants squad to pick one player that's the MVP is going to be a heck of a job for somebody.
It's worth pointing out that none of those players are in the top five scorers in the league.
So exactly. What? I agree with you, boys. I'm going to say something here. There's not one Belfast Giants player that I would change from this year's team.
But we had that question on Twitter, a few weeks ago. And
I honestly wouldn't.
On the fence and stuff.
No, I honestly wouldn't change. I wouldn't change any of them. I was just trying to be a wee bit more varied there because I knew what the answers were likely to be. You know, I wouldn't swap anyone this Belfast Giants team, I have to say that. But players like Matt Francis, Thomas Kirka have been real standout players for me in any of the games that I've watched this season. It'd be great to see them in a Giants uniform at some stage.
And we did it with the D-men. You know, as Coach has said, Ryan Janan, Nicholas Jetty, you've got to give certain guys, Guillaume Doucette, Jeremy Tender, some of these guys are having absolutely standout season. Bobby Shaw, Mo! There you go. Having another 28 goals for the Fife Flyers, and they're languishing at ninth in the league. You know, that the guy is high quality. And we'll move on to the next one. Bit of a funny question here. I'll go to Coach first, because I know Paddy's a lover and not a fighter. If you had to go toe-to-toe with any Giant, past or present, who would you drop a glove with and why?
Oh, jeez.
Can I answer that first?
Is this said again?
Can I answer that just quickly?
Yeah, right, go ahead.
Pierre-Luc Foubert, he dropped like a stone. Gust of wind.
Martin Leivers.
Is this on the premise that I'm also a tough guy in my team, or
are you not?
Well, I would like to think so. Try me out, mate. Try me out. If I was a tough guy and I had to fight somebody in the league to test myself that I've seen playing for the Belfast Giants or anyone across the league, it would have to be Paul Cruz. He was the toughest of the tough for me. He was the quintessential tough guy. He had the stare. He had the beat up face. He had knuckles and fisted like stone. I would love to test. If I was a tough guy, I'd love to test myself against the likes of Paul Cruz. He was the toughest of the tough, in my opinion.
They're all boys. Well, then we'll move on to the last one because you just don't want to know my answer. I'd take on them all.
Yeah.
The last one's from our good friend Jack O'Gaz. We'll ask you first, Coach. How's your leg?
How's my leg?
It's just a Twitter question.
The middle leg's perfectly fine.
Now, Coach, come on, family show. The leg's getting better, Jacko. The swelling's going down. I'll be back for the playoffs. And that, my friends, is the end of Twitter questions this week. Thanks to everyone who took the time. We'll answer the ones that didn't get on the show on Twitter.
At AVFTV, hashtag Ask Davey. We put them up every Tuesday. It'll be Wednesday next week, won't it? Because there's a game on Tuesday. But they're up before every podcast, and get involved. Gentlemen, two games, one at the weekend and one next week before we speak again. First of all, we've got the Brayhead Clan on Saturday night in Brayhead. Brayhead are 5 wins from the last 10. A few changes over in that suburb of Glasgow. Kenton Smith has departed, I think, as of yesterday, citing that he wanted to return to his wife and his kids down in Cardiff. Mysteriously, there's going to be an announcement of the Cardiff Devils of a new player coming in. I can't think who that could be. And in Kenton Smith's place coming in, well, a few weeks or last week, was former Nottingham Panther Mario Larocque. Davey, 5 wins in the last 10 for Brayhead. A couple of new players. Are they still in with the chance of fighting for the title? It's been a bit stop-starty recently.
No, I don't think so. I think it's the Gardner Conference that they're going to have to concentrate on to try and get that number 2 seed for the playoff that we spoke about earlier. They're still going to carry, I think, Joe Collins on his way back from injury, so they're going to still be carrying that extra import. And that's, you know, they're lucky that they're bringing in the numbers through the door that they can cope with that. Kenton Smith's obviously heading back to Wales, but you know, it's going to be a hard game for the Giants. It's never an easy place to go to, and the last time we played there was a bit of a barn burner, and hopefully the travel club's going over, so the Giants will have a good load of fans behind them, and hopefully shout them on to a good road victory.
Coach, the Brayhead Clan, like I say, their title push, as Davey says, fallen away, but they are pushing for this Gardner Conference, so it's going to be dangerous because they're obviously wanting to basically stand up and be counted.
No question. It's a difficult place to go into, the Brayhead Arena, no question, and I think the Belfast Giants have been fairly dominant against the Clan this season, and we've played very well. You know, Kyle Jones, he's letting in the guts of 5 goals a game against the Belfast Giants this season, and you know, for me, that's one area that I've really picked up on, having watched some of the Brayhead Clan matches against the Giants, is the goaltending. Just, I think Ryan Finnerty will be looking to upgrade that come the summertime, and you know, with our offensive threats that we have, I think we'll be putting a lot of rubber on Kyle Jones and putting him under a lot of pressure, and I expect us to win that game as well. We come out and play with the passion and intensity that we have done. I expect us to pick up the 2 points in that one, Paddy.
Here's my kiss of death. I'm glad to see Mario Larocque back there, because when he was with the Nottingham Panthers, he was rubbish. Moving on to Tuesday, we've got the first leg of the Challenge Cup semi-final against the Cardiff Devils. Devils, a bit of a mixture. Again, they're also 5 wins from the last 10, but that includes being tanked by the Belfast Giants twice in those 10, but also beating the Nottingham Panthers twice in those 10, including stuffing them 8-3 last week, Davey. We don't know what we're going to get from this Cardiff Devils side.
Bit of a mixed bag, and they've obviously brought in another goaltender. Young Cook just wasn't up to the mark for them, unfortunately, and straight away after the play of the Giants, they've gone and hammered an in and out Nottingham as well, you know. But I think I said on the podcast last week, I think we've got a certain fear factor now over the Cardiff Devils as well. They're coming to play us not expecting to get very much. If they can hold us tight for a period, and then they think they can get something out of the game. But if we can get away from them, I think by the time I'm making the trip over the Severn Bridge in a few weeks, the game could already be over.
Coach, something that slipped under the radar in the last couple of weeks is the fact that we made a big deal of the fact that there have been 19 imports signed for the Nottingham Panthers, and they're able to sign 2 teams. What slipped under the radar, maybe it's because of their performances and all the other circuses that's going on, is that there's another team that have signed 19 imports this season, and it's the Cardiff Devils.
Yeah, they've signed a hell of a lot of imports. What did we say it was? 17?
It's 19.
And the with one to come tomorrow?
Oh, no, including the signing of what we're expecting to be Kenton Smith.
Right, like that's just crazy numbers, isn't it? You know, but I suppose some of the argument could be put that the likes of Phil Cook would be on very, very little money. Did I read somewhere, or hear somewhere that he was getting paid next to nothing? He was over on expenses, but, you know, they've gone and signed a lot of Eastern European guys and what have you as well for the team this year. It's a crazy amount of players, and just shows you again the instability within that club. And again, I'm going to say it, you know, the Belfast Giants, and Davey's already highlighted it, you know, the Belfast Giants have the Cardiff Devils number. They fear us, and whenever you play with a certain element of fear, it's hard to play a very good, clear thinking type game. And the Belfast Giants, again, I expect us to win that game in Tuesday night at the Odyssey reasonably convincingly, I have to say. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see their new goaltender in it. You know, we've said it a million times. If you've got good goaltending, it gives you a chance to win in any given night. So it'll be interesting to see that change. But overall, the Belfast Giants are just going to be too strong for the Cardiff Devils, especially over two legs.
Well, just to give the opportunity, in case I've got this wrong, for any Cardiff Devils fans that might listen, my 19 that I've counted are Faulkner, Lord, Bebrere, Blight, Kirker, Marsh, Morissette, Plumpton, Conboy, Chesky, Litmatinen, Adams, Svet, Kozowski, Kirichenko, Blaze, Smith, LaCosta, and Cook. That is 19. And that's, you know, we talk about the Nottingham Panthers signing 19 imports, and in years gone by, the Cardiff Devils fans are very vocal at the fact that the Belfast Giants were signing umpteen numbers of imports. That's a lot of players in one season, and for them to be sitting where they are at this moment in time, there's obviously problems higher up. Anyway, that game against the Belfast Giants is on the Tuesday, 7 o'clock face-off at the Odyssey Arena, and it'll be live, if you can't get down to the rink, on Giants Live TV. One of yours, Coach?
Next Tuesday evening. I am actually not 100% sure, to be really honest with you. I'm not sure, mate.
My hair says. Well, before we go, Davey, Gander Flyers.
Another sort of in-and-out weekend for the Flyers. You know, they took a bit of a beating from the Clarenville Caribous on Saturday. They got hammered 8, and then they turned around on the Sunday afternoon. Over in Newfoundland there, they seemed to play Saturday night, Sunday matinee game, and they turned it around and won in the shootout. Good friend of the show, Patrick O'Brien, seems to have taken over the starting goaltender position there in Gander. He won the shootout, and he turned away 36 shots on Saturday night, and, you know, ended up getting pulled because, you know, just not getting the help from the D. But our old friend Pete Campbell, old Pistol Pete, used to play here in Belfast for the Giants, still second in the league and scoring 14 goals in 11 games, I think it is, that he has now. You know, we called him at the start of the season that he was going to be the go-to guy for Gander, and he's the go-to guy for Gander. That's a tongue twister. Yeah. And it's turned out that way, but, you know, there's not many games left for a season. You know, we're languishing sort of bottom of the league. We've got 2, 4, 6 games left, and I don't think at this stage that the playoffs is going to be a realistic target this season. It's all about rebuilding for next year now.
And we're going to get a chance, the three of us, to chat to the guys at Gander.
Yeah, Corey's been on the email looking for just, you know, how we got involved with following the Gander Flyers. Obviously, it's came through the Pete Campbell connection, but obviously they do something similar. Flyers All Access, they do a bit of the Cat's Whiskers. It's a bit of a video cast on, we plug for John over there, a bit of a video cast on YouTube, and they've asked us would we have time to have a chat with them. And it's chatting hockey, and as my wife knows, if we can chat hockey for an awful long time to anybody who wants to listen.
We'll keep tabs on the Gander Flyers, and of course, hashtag Ulster Flyers. Gentlemen, we'll talk next Wednesday. That'll be an interesting one because I'm going on holiday. We'll talk next Wednesday after the game against the Cardiff Devils, the first leg of that Challenge Cup semi-finals. But until then, thanks for joining us.
Cheers, Paddy.
See you, Paddy.
Thanks as always to Davey and the coach. Thanks to Kevin Surrett for joining us. A great chat there, and long may his point production continue. An absolute gentleman he was to talk to as well. And thanks to Joe Bowen. What an interview. What a guy. Again, an absolute star to talk to. You're talking to a guy who's got so much experience in the NHL, calling games, and so much experience to talk about. What do you talk to the guy? He was just absolutely a real experience to talk to, a real pleasure to talk to, and it was really fun to do. One other thing to add, we did speak in this week's show about the game against the Cardiff Devils, and that we expected that that Kenton Smith, having left the Brayhead clan, would join the Cardiff Devils. While we were on air, it was announced that it's not going to be Kenton Smith. One of the things that was announced, that Joe Myers, backup goalkeeper, was released. Incredibly. Listen, this is another one like the whole Phil Hill saga. They've now released a servant of the club, Joe Myers, to retain Phil Cook, an import who's going to have two import netminders. That's four import netminders the Cardiff Devils have played with this season. But they've released servant of the club Joe Myers. I'm sure his brother isn't going to be too happy about that. They've also released Jaroslav Chesky, the Czech forward who was with them, and who they've brought in is a Latvian defenseman, Martins Gipters. It is another import, so it is still 19 imports for the Cardiff Devils. That game's next Tuesday, 7 p.m. at the Odyssey Arena. And if you can't get down to the game for the first leg of that Challenge Cup semi, you can go straight to GiantsLive.tv, where they'll have the commentary there. Maybe from Coach, maybe from Sis, maybe from Nigel Ringland, who knows. Before that, of course, we got the game on Saturday against the Brayhead Clan in Brayhead. Keep an eye on kingdomofthegiants.com for all the information on where you can get the details of that. What else is there to talk about? Soundcloud.com/AVFTB. We have all the interviews from this week post-game, including one with Stephen Murphy that was quickly done after the Sheffield Steelers game this week. If you want to get in contact with us, podcast@kingdomofthegiants.com. www.kingdomofthegiants.com/podcast is the website. And of course, the Twitter is @AVFTB and #AskDavy for any questions for next week. Next week I'm on holiday, so we still hope to have a show. We'll see how that goes. But wherever you are this weekend, we hope you enjoy your hockey. We'll catch you here next time on A View from the Bridge. Dash it up against the world and steal you around.